I just wanted to do a quick addendum to last week, where we talked about the mitzvah of Peter Chamor, and it's the mitzvah of sanctification of the firstborn donkey, and the possibility of redeeming the firstborn donkey with a lamb or kid, if that's a goat, not a human, if you don't want to keep the sanctification on the firstborn donkey. So it's interesting because we noted also that it's very strange that if you don't want to redeem it, so you have to kill it by knife, by axing it in the back of the neck, which is a little bit, we found it hard to understand. Not that we need to understand it, but it's a little bit of an unusual type mitzvah. So actually, the Ravid says on the Rambam. So the Rambam is the source for our count of the mitzvot. So he counts the pidyon of Peter Chamor as one mitzvah, and the arifa, the killing of the Peter Chamor, is another mitzvah. And the Gemara, and the reason he does that, even though he might not ordinarily, is that he says mitzvah is the Gemara says. Mitzvahs pedia kudemis le mitzvahs arifa, as the Sefer HaChinuch quoted. He said it's more preferable to redeem it than to kill it, because why waste a perfectly good donkey? And as I said last time. So actually, the Ravid is masig on the Rambam. He critiques the Rambam's count of these two as separate mitzvahs. He says that the arifa of a Peter Chamor, the killing of a Peter Chamor, is not a mitzvah el avera. He says it's actually a sin to do the mitzvah of to do what we call the mitzvah of arifas peter chamor, because really what it is it's not a separate mitzvah, but rather it's a device. The God's telling you that if you don't do the mitzvah that you're really supposed to do, you have to kill it. It's actually a sin, but you're really supposed to redeem it. But if you don't redeem it, then as a punishment, you're supposed to kill it. It's not really a mitzvah per se. And the Ravid just says that when the Gemara says mitzvahs pedia kodemis the mitzvah sarifa, the mitzvah of redeeming it is preferable to the mitzvah of killing it, it's just because it uses the language of mitzvah by the redeeming, so it uses the language of mitzvah by the killing also, but it's not actually a separate mitzvah. He says ein ze mitzvah el avera. That's the opinion of the Ravid, not followed by the Rambam per se, but it's just interesting to note that such an opinion does exist. Also, there was a little bit of, I wasn't so clear last time, about what happens if a donkey gives birth to something that looks more like a horse than a donkey. And the halacha is that if it has some characteristics of donkey, even if it looks somewhat like a horse, you do have to redeem it. But if it looks completely like a horse, then it's not applicable. The mitzvah of pedia and the mitzvah of arifa are not applicable to it at all. And I believe I didn't state that so clearly last time. So we finished the mitzvahs in up to Parshas Beshalach, and we get to Parshas Yisro, which contains, of course, drum roll, the Ten Commandments. So the Ten Commandments are not actually ten separate mitzvahs per se. They're more than ten mitzvahs are contained in what we call the Ten Commandments. The Sefer HaChinuch, following the Rambam, counts many mitzvahs included in the Ten Commandments, beginning with mitzvah Chaf Hei, the 25th mitzvah, mitzvahs ha'amana b'mitzios Hashem Yisbarach, the mitzvah to believe in God, which is the basis for all other mitzvahs, because if God's not commanding you to do all these things, so why bother? Some people in modern society might tell you that they do perform some of the mitzvahs out of connection with the Jewish people and heritage, etc., but per se, there's no reason to perform the mitzvahs if you don't really believe that they have to do with serving God. So the Sefer HaChinuch says that the 25th mitzvah is L'hamin sheyesh la'olam Eloah echad shehimtzi kol hanimtza. To believe that in the world there exists one God who created everything that exists in the world. U'mikocho v'cheftzo haya kol mashehu. And from his two things, from his power and his will, everything that exists, exists. V'shehaya v'shehiya, and of course that ever existed, ever will exist, la'deyad forever. V'chihu hotzianu meretz Mitzrayim v'nosan lanu ha'torah. He doesn't stop there. You don't just have to believe in one omnipotent God, but you have to believe that this omnipotent God is the one who's also the personal nation God of the Jewish people who took us out of the land of Egypt and gave us the Torah. So it's insufficient for these purposes, apparently, if you say, yes, I believe in God. Like, if you're a deist or something like that, and you say that, yes, you believe there is a God, and God exists and created the world, but God's no longer involved in human affairs, and he's not the one, and we observe the Torah because it's our national heritage. In other words, 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2 for these purposes. If you believe in God, and you believe that the Jewish people have to observe the Torah for ethnic, national purposes, then you have not really, you missed the boat for these purposes. You have to believe that God is the one, the creator of the universe, is the one who gave us the Torah. Shenemar bitchilas nesinas haTorah, just as God's presenting the Torah, it's not the beginning of the Torah per se, Bereishis bara Elokim, which is also an important point to be made, but in the beginning of when God's presenting the mitzvahs of the Torah, he says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha asher hotzeisicha me'eretz Mitzrayim. I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. Uperusho, the explanation is, Kilo Amar, Teidu v'taminu shi'esh lo'olam Eloah, that you should believe that there is a God in the world. Ki milas Anochi Torah el hametzias. Anochi, I guess, is considered a more powerful version of saying I than Ani. Anochi is more formal, although linguistically, I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but stylistically, I mean, historical linguistically, I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but in terms of stylistic usage in the Torah, that probably is the case, that Anochi is a more formal, powerful statement, and it's not just stating a fact, but it's an exhortation for us to accept the fact that Anochi Hashem Lokech, I am the Lord your God. The Asher Amar Asher Utseisicha. So why did God go on and say, besides Anochi Hashem Elokecha, why did he bother saying, Asher Otzeisicha, Meretz Mitzrayim, Yibeis Avadim, I took you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage? Lomar shelo yifte levavchem lokachas inyan tzeischem me'avdus Mitzrayim u'makos ha-mitzrim derech mikra, that not only should you believe that I am God, and separately you can believe that, yeah, we got out of Egypt, and it's very nice and very cool that we had all these plagues that affected the Egyptians on our account. So our hearts should not become widened and satiated on that account, that we should think of the exodus from Egypt as a regular natural event that just was happenstance. Ela de'u, you should know, she'anochi hu shotzeisi eschem b'cheifetz uv'hashkocha. I am the one who took you out with my will and with my hashkocha, my supervision, my involvement in worldly affairs. So just as when I was discussing with Avram Avinu the fact that his descendants would be strangers in the land of Egypt, that is the reason that I took the Jewish people out of the land of Egypt. So you have to connect the two in your head, the existence of God and the existence of God as the God of the Jewish people who's involved in history, as opposed to the, what a deist call, the watchmaker, I think, just they created the world and let it go. It's not the Jewish belief as expressed here in the Sefer Chinuch. Shorish mitzvah zo, ein zarech bir. The reasoning for this mitzvah is, it's unnecessary to even explain it, because the whole Torah is dependent on it. Yadu adavar v'niglu l'kol, it's known and obvious to everyone, ki ho emunah azos yisod hadas, that this belief is the foundation, the cornerstone of all religion. V'asher lo yamin b'zeh kofer b'iker, and if you don't believe in this, then you've denied the whole point of existence. Everything is dependent on this. V'ein lo chelek uzchus im Yisrael, even if you're a fully practicing Jew, let's say you're what we call nowadays orthoprax. There's a movement, not a movement, but an undercurrent, apparently is especially prevalent in academic circles, where there are academicians who are who don't, based on their studies or just whatever other readings, don't believe that in the traditional version of Jewish history and the development of halacha and the Torah as traditional Judaism describes. But yet they believe that for whatever personal reasons, they feel it is incumbent upon the Jewish people to observe the Torah. So that here is still considered kafar b'ikar. If you don't believe it's tied into God, then you ain lo chelik uzchusim Yisrael. Even if you do practice the commandments in a physical fashion, you still don't have any part of the merits and the true being part of the Jewish people. Now, that's not necessarily to say that he subscribes to that you have to believe in the 13 principles of faith as the Rambam presented them, which is our usual assumption today. But at least there are Rishonim, apparently, as it has been touted by certain scholars recently, that don't accept the 13 principles of faith of the Rambam per se, and just as long as you believe in the basics and you lead a Torah true lifestyle, then you're pretty much a good Jew. So at least, but that doesn't extend so far, even according to anyone else, apparently, this wouldn't extend so far as to if you don't even believe that the whole source of the Torah and of Halacha is ultimately from God, then you really have missed the point. Even if you do observe the Torah outwardly, that's not sufficient. Vinyan ha'amonahu, what does it mean exactly to believe in God? It's not simply to say, oh, I'm going to shut everything out and I'm just going to take a leap of faith and not truly internalize it. But the point of belief is as follows. Sheyikba benafsho sheha'emeskein. You should firmly entrench it in your soul that the truth is that God exists and gave us the Torah. V'sheyifshar chilov zeh b'shum panim. It's impossible in your mind for this information to be replaced with any other version of the events. Beim yushal alav, if you were asked about this, yoshiv lakol shoel shezei yamin libo, you'll answer anyone who asks that yes, this is what you believe. Belo yoda bechiluv zeafilu yomru lahargo. Even if you're threatened with death, you're not going to admit any other version of the facts besides the one just presented. So once you totally internalize this in your heart, you're going to take it out into your actions. You're going to express verbally, if it's totally, totally entrenched within you, that you believe in God and that he's the God of the Jewish people. So that's... you're not going to be able to express anything else with your mouth. This is going to be the only way you could even express yourself. I mean, Anochi is a separate commandment. But it doesn't matter, because the number of mitzvos is not identical with the number of commandments. So in other words, from the next couple psukim, you're going to have several commandments within what we call the second commandment of thou shalt not make before me any graven images. Then that's actually, according to the Chinuch and the Rambam, that actually consists of several mitzvos in the reckoning of the 613 mitzvos, even though as the 10 commandments, Aseres HaDibros, that would only be one commandment. The commandments in that case would not be the same as 613 commandments. We translate mitzvos and dibros in English both as commandments, but that wouldn't technically be true. Now, because dibros also doesn't mean commandments, dibros means divine speech. Diber means divine speech. So even if it consists of more than one mitzvah of command of the Torah, in a halachic sense, that would not necessarily be a contradiction. Aseres HaDvarim in the Tanakh, yes, Aseres HaDvarim, but that's the same thing. It means the 10 matters. It doesn't necessarily translate into the Minyan HaMitzvos.
It's more like an Avah. Okay, so... let me go back to the first question. Okay. How does the critics will say you can't command someone to believe?
That's a major problem. How can you command someone to believe? In other words, if someone decides that they don't believe in God, then it's very difficult to then say to them, well, you cannot believe in God because God commanded you to believe in God. So this is a problem that's been grappled with by philosophers for a long time. I mean, the Rambam uses the language, instead of believing, of leida. It's a mitzvah to know, because the Rambam holds that from a purely rational standpoint, one would arrive at the conclusion that that God exists and the Torah is from God, etc. Now, not everybody accepts that necessarily. And using contemporary philosophy, and I mean, obviously, any other philosopher in the Rambam's time too didn't really agree with that either. But we think the Rambam was bigger than they are. But again, it's very difficult because you're starting with a premise, and then you're starting with a prejudice that this is true, and then you say, well, it's we're commanded to believe it's true. It's very difficult. I agree. I'm not a philosopher. I really don't. I don't have all the answers in this. Again, you can go around and around in circles with all the philosophy and never arrive at any practical conclusions per se. It's no. Again, also the Rambam says in Hilchos Avodah Zarah that you can't trust everyone to arrive at the right conclusion because everybody is no gabadaver. Everybody has their desires and their preconceived notions without exception. Everyone has it. So how can you trust people necessarily to go out and they might come to the wrong conclusion? They might honestly believe it. So that's why God had to command us originally that we have to believe in God and not go off and go on a philosophical quest that leads us away from that conclusion. V'im yizke lalos b'malos ha'chochma, if you merit to go up the levels of wisdom, ulavavo yovin of einav yireb emofes nechtach shemun azol shem in emes uvaror, then let's say you become very intelligent and you see with your own understanding and with your eyes in a clear sign that this belief that you believed it is true and clear. Efshar liyos davar built is it's impossible to be anything besides this. Ozi kayem mitzvah sasezo mitzvah min amuvchar. He doesn't say you're not yotze if you don't do this, but he says that this method of not just believing because with blind faith per se, but if you actually do some philosophy and you really internalize and you really get to the point where it's totally clear to you that this is the true belief, and it's impossible that anything could be true besides this, then that is the mitzvah min amuvchar. That is, I mean, according to the Rambam's totally rationalist view, I don't know if you really fully fulfill the mitzvah according to him unless you really understand philosophically that it must be this way, that God exists and gave us the Torah. According to the Chinuch, the way he presents it is that this is the best mitzvah, but certainly we can't necessarily expect everyone to reach this level. Dine mitzvah zo, the halachos of this mitzvah are as follows. Kigon mashe mechuyav aleinu lahamin olav, like what exactly we're obligated to believe about God. Shekol hayicholes v'chol hagedula v'hagvura v'hatiferes v'chol ahod, like we sing every Shabbos, l'cha Hashem hagedula v'hagvura v'hatiferes. So we have to believe that God has all the potential of doing things, all the ability and all the grandeur and the strength and glory, and the chol abracha, the chol akiyumbo, and all the blessing and all the existence is due to him. The she'ein banu koach v'seichel hasigul hagid godlo v'tuva. We have no possibility to and strength and intelligence to totally comprehend his full grandeur and goodness. Ki l'rov ma'alosu v'hodo, according to his very high level and glory, lo yusag rak l'atzmo, he only God can fully understand what God is all about. And that's also why, as Rabbi Block was discussing actually recently in his shiurim about tefillah, that's why we try to limit the praises that we give God in our davening, and we only use the praises that are recorded explicitly in the Bible, because it's really impossible. If we add our own praises, we can never fully express God's praise as much as we truly should. So we stick with what we have before us. V'lishlol mimenu, we have to remove from our minds of ascribing to him, b'chol kochenu, with all our might, kol chisoron v'chol mashehu hefech kol shleimus v'chol mala, anything that's the opposite of anything that's the opposite of total perfection and high level. And everything that comes out of this, such as knowing that he exists, shalom, perfect, bilti guf velo koach baguf, also has no body. This was a major issue also in the times of the Rishonim, although maybe by the times of the Chinuch it was pretty much settled, but there was a folk belief in the times of the Rishonim based on misunderstandings of Midrashim and verses in Tanakh where it does anthropomorphize God, in other words, to make a point to help us relate to it better if we think of God working like Etzba Elokimhi, like the Pasuk talks about the Egyptian saying that the plagues are a finger of God. So we anthropomorphize it to help the Torah anthropomorphizes it to help us understand Vizro and Etuya, God looks out with an outstretched arm. It's all metaphors, but it's put in human terms to help us understand. So based on misunderstanding of this, there was a folk belief in the times of the Rishonim, possibly before also, that God did have a body. But this was, thankfully, this belief does not exist anymore. And famously, the Rambam stated that anyone who believes that God has a body is a heretic and has no portion in the world to come, etc., etc. And there's a very famous Hasag of the Ravid over there, the criticizer of the Rambam that I mentioned at the beginning of the Shir regarding Petr Chamor. He says that the Rambam is correct, that that's absolutely false to believe that God has a body, but he says that people a lot bigger than you have believed that. So he thought the Rambam was a big rabbi and he knew a lot of Torah, but he didn't like his conclusions on everything. So he said that even though it's completely false, the Ravid agrees that this is absolutely not true, but he says it's not a terrible heresy per se to believe that God has a body. But now everyone accepts the Rambam. Yeah. Because if something has a body, it by definition has to have some imperfection. And God doesn't have imperfection, and therefore no body. God has no imperfections, as I said. And lots of other things are said about this. That they are all explained in the books of those who know godly wisdom. Philosophy, I guess. Ashrei hazochim eleha. Praiseworthy, happy are those who are merit to such a thing. Again, the Sefer HaChinuch says that it's only through philosophy can one fully fulfill this mitzvah as is appropriate, as is fully appropriate. That's also why the Rambam, when he discusses this mitzvah, he says, it doesn't say lahamin like the Sefer HaChinuch says, it doesn't say to believe, he says leida, to know, not to believe. So really, if you just, according to the Rambam, you really have not fulfilled this mitzvah if you just jump into it with blind faith, and it's just because of what everyone else is doing, but you really have to work in your mind and go through all the philosophical arguments and proofs and really internalize and really understand and know that God does exist. Obviously, this is applicable in all places and all times. You can't escape it. Yeah, he's going to get to that in a second. B'zchorim uvin kevos obviously applies to both men and women, although, as the Rambam also points out, that women were a lot less likely to learn philosophy and therefore a lot less likely to fully fulfill this mitzvah in the ideal fashion. But nowadays, we have Revel, such schools such as Revel, co-educational, Baruch Hashem, women can also fulfill, they study philosophy and they get to the right conclusions, then they can also fulfill this mitzvah, al buria. V'ilver aleha ein lo chelek uzchus im Yisrael kemo shamarnu. And anyone who violates it, not just he neglected to perform a positive commandment, which is not usually so bad, and while there's no specific punishment for failure to believe in God, you just have no part and merit of belonging to the Jewish people. So it's worse than not eating matzah or something like that. It's a failure on a much more fundamental level, but again, there's no specific punishment for it, such as malchus or lashes or anything of that nature.
Made today between someone who says there is no God, atheist, I guess, and one who doesn't know. if does that affect this mitzvah at all, or are they both the same?
I mean, you're referring to the difference between an atheist who trumpets the fact that he absolutely doesn't believe that there's a God, and an agnostic who says that we have insufficient proof to know whether God exists or not.
Correct.
So for
two separate positions, because according to the Fina, so they're the same.
It's a failure in the same mitzvah. It's not different mitzvahs, but just, I guess, different levels. Both of them equally did not fulfill the mitzvah to believe in God, but the atheist is just considered much more, just to have missed the boat on an even higher level, and is more dangerous to spout his views and to be so sure of his views publicly. But in terms of fulfilling the mitzvah, it's really basically the same. Again, I mean, this isn't to say, again, everyone in their personal quest in life and philosophic thoughts, I mean, sure, everyone has doubts of some kind at some point or another in their life, but this is talking about someone, I assume you're referring to someone who has settled on being an atheist or an agnostic. Okay, v'zos min ha-mitzvos, shein lahem zman yadua, shekol yemei ha-adam chayev lios b'machshava zo. This is one of the mitzvos, Tmidios, as was just pointed out, that this is one of the mitzvos that has no set time, and simply at every single point in a person's life, one has to have this idea internalized. Mitzvah. So we just discussed the major fundamental point of existence in half an hour. Aren't we proud of us? Okay. Mitzvah 26. It's sort of the converse of the previous one. It says, Shelo namin Elohim zulosi Hashem yizbarach levado. That we should not believe in any God, with the lowercase g, besides the Lord, Hashem. Shenemar, lo yihye lecha Elohim acherim al panai. This is the second of the Ten Commandments, which contains more than one mitzvah, but this is the second commandment. Thou shalt not have any other gods besides me. Uperusho, its explanation is, lo tamin eloa acher zulosi, you shall not believe in any other god besides me. The Chosav HaRamban Zal, the Ramban says, lo timtza leolam shiomar kosuv Elohim acherim rak al ha'amona salev. The Ramban points out that when the Torah uses the phrase Elohim Acherim, other gods, it always is only referring to believing, or rather the requirement not to believe in other gods, as opposed to Avala Ha'asiya, in terms of making things or making graven images or establishing false gods. Lo Yomar Leolam Lo sase Elohim Acherim. The Torah will never tell you, don't make other gods. Ki lo tipol beloshon asiya acherim. It doesn't make sense to say, don't make other gods, because it doesn't make sense, because the other gods don't really exist, so they can only exist in your head. So it says, don't believe, when it makes sense to say, don't believe in other gods, because you might imagine in your head that other gods exist, where that's not true. The Torah can tell you, don't make a graven image, don't make an idol, but it can't still tell you, don't make another god, because that doesn't make sense, because when you make it, it's not really another god. It's just an idol. The Yafa Dikteg Zichrono Livracha, and the Ramban, who's a couple generations before the Chinuch, receives the Haskama of the Chinuch. It says, Divrei Pi Chacham Chein, that the words of the mouth of a wise man are graceful, which I believe is a quote from Koheles, if I'm not mistaken. V'zos ha-mitzvah hi ha-ikar ha-godol she-ba-torah she-akol talu yalav. And this mitzvah is also the great foundation, the great main essence of the Torah, that everything is dependent upon it. Kemo she-amru zichron al-vracha, as our sages tell us, kol ha-modeh ba-avodah zara kilu kofer b'chol ha-torah kula. that anyone who admits the existence or admits that he believes in Avodah Zarah, ki'ilu kofer b'kola Torah kula. It's as if he denied the entire Torah. Can you get V'achor ha'mekabel ba'eloa la'shum dover zulosi Hashem yizbarach levado. So this applies to more than one type of situation. Thank you. It applies to someone who accepts any other being as his God, or accepts or ascribes godly attributes to anything besides God. Oha oved oso kederech avodoso. This also applies to not just accepting it, but to worshiping other gods in the manner that they're normally worshipped. Kilomar kederech she'ovdino soham ma'aminim bo, like the way the people who believe in this, in the, that deity, worship it. O afilu shelo kederech avodoso im yavdenu ba'arba avodos yaduos. There are four things that are considered worship, even if this deity is not normally worshipped in that manner. And what are they? Shehein, zivuach, sacrificing an animal, v'kitur, and burning incense, v'nisuch, and pouring a libation, v'hishtachava, and bowing down. So if you did any of those four things, you violated this commandment of lo yelecho Elohim acherim al ponai. So we have a principle that, so these four things are you violated the mitzvah if you do these four things, in addition, of course, to any way which the Avodah Zarah is actually worshipped. So let's say there is an idol that's set up in the town square, and everyone worships it by slapping it on the face. That's considered its worship. So if you go up and you elbow it, so technically, you know, it's not, if you do it out of respect for the Avodah Zarah, so that's also not good. So we're going to get to that in a second, but technically you're not chayiv for worshiping it if you elbow it. But if you slap it, then you are liable for worshiping it, because that's the normal method for worshiping the statue. And let's say even if no one ever burns incense in front of the statue, still these four things are always, the Torah always considers them ways of worshiping. So if you burn incense or pour a libation in front of this idol, even though no one else ever worships it that way, and somebody who's the high priest of this idol, when he saw you pouring a libation in front of it, he'd say, what are you doing? But that doesn't make sense. We don't pour a libation. Still, the Torah considers it as if you violated the mitzvah because you performed the standard method of worship in front of it.
And this is generally accepted?
Yes.
There are these four specific yes. things that have a special category regardless?
Absolutely. Paskin like this, halach lemaisa.
So people burn incense because whatever the reason? And
if you burn incense because you like the smell, so that's fine.
Okay.
Or if you're trying to cover up marijuana or something like that,
right.
That's perfectly permissible, halachically. But if you burn it as, because if you have a little statue in your room that you burn incense in honor of, then that's Avodah Zarah. That wasn't an endorsement of smoking marijuana. I meant if you already smoked marijuana, whether that's permissible or not, halachically, is a separate discussion. But once you already smoked it and you want to cover up the smell, then it's permitted to burn incense. Prateha, the details are as follows. Kegon mash amrush im kibel be'aloa echad min hanivroim. Let's say you accepted any created thing, anything in existence on earth, as a god or a deity. Ve'afilu modesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu sholed alo v'al Eloho. Let's say, not saying you believe that this is God. No, you know that God is God, Hashem is God, but this is a demigod. This is a secondary form of God that's also completely Avodah Zarah. Avar alo yiyah. You violated also this commandment of lo yiyah. Also, if you ascribe powers to malachim, that's also seemingly, though this is also a bit of a discussion in the Rishonim, but if you specifically believe that the malachim have separate powers besides what God tells them to do, or the missions that he sends them on, that's also a bizarre, because that's, you believe that there is a supernatural power out there that has its own MO, and its own way of going about things, and God is, you know, technically in charge of it, but that also could be Avodah Zarah. That's one of the major issues. Yeah. Oh, I skipped that line. Yes. It just says v'nisuk v'zorek davar echad hu u'mischayvim v'zrika kimo v'nisuk. So it says right. So if you throw something in front of it, it's considered also as if you poured a libation. And there's a halacha though that has to be zrika, what we the Gemara calls zrika hamishtaberes, that if you just, let's say, you take a stone and you throw it at the idol, so the stone, if that's the normal method of worshiping that idol, then that's avodah zarah. But if nobody ever worships it that way, and you have intention of throwing the stone at the idol as if you're pouring a libation, or instead of pouring wine in front of it, you throw a stone down in front of it. So that's not considered one of the four absolute categories of worship, because it has to be something that you throw and it breaks into pieces. But if you take lots of stones, like little pebbles, and you throw it in front of it, and it just like you throw blood on the altar or something, that it breaks into little pieces, that is considered one of the four absolute methods of worship. So back to where we thought we were before. What's considered derech avoda and what's not? Vim avadahu derech bizui v'avodaso b'chachmadino. So it talks about how there were idols that were worshipped by going to the bathroom in front of the idol, or revealing oneself, taking off one's clothes in front of the idol. So that's also avodah zarah, but only if it's derech avodaso b'chach, only if it's normally worshipped that way. If you do that to an idol besides that, of course, it's not technically avodah zarah. Barba avodos asuros b'chol ha'alohos ad heichan mispashet isuran. How far does the four absolute methods of worship go? Kinyan mash amru zichronim livracha, as the sages tell us, the shiber makel lefaneha b'chal zivuachu. Like I just said, if you take a stick and you break it in front of the idol, then that is considered also like sacrificing. V'chein mash'asu zichrona livracha likros b'sifrei avodah zarah. Here it sounds like it's a derabanan or something like that. It's very, very strange. A pashtus that this is also deraisa from Los Asuru. It's part of what's going to lead you, that there's a separate commandment which we'll see later when we get to the end of Parsha Shlach. In the parasha of Tzitzis, where it says "Velos asur acharei levavchem acharenichem," you shouldn't go astray after your heart. So part of that is likros b'sifrei of the avodah zarah, to read books that discuss avodah zarah. Hamechubarim binyanei avodoseha o bedvar macherim shela kol shegormin lahamin ba b'shum tzad. There's a missionary book. Apparently, there's been some problem in Washington Heights that missionaries have sent out literature for people to read. So if you go reading that book, even if you're just curious about what they say, that's not permissible. If you're an anti-missionary expert and you need to read the book to know how to respond to it, so that could be a different story. But if you're a regular person and you want to read this book just for entertainment purposes, that's forbidden, because it might, even though one should certainly hope that this low-class literature will not, certainly goes without saying, should not even begin to tempt a Jew to abandon his or her faith, but still, it's not permissible to read it, because there's b'shum tzad, that if there's anything that could possibly cause us to believe avodah zarah, we're not supposed to read it. This or here who are alei v'achareha. Also, if you get in your head that maybe avodah zarah is true, you're supposed to dismiss it from your thoughts immediately. You're not supposed to keep it churning in your head. The din, I mean, as much as possible. If it's that thought, you can't stop thoughts from popping into your head all the time, but you're not supposed to intentionally keep turning this idea in your head. V'din Yisrael she'avoda afilu pa'amachas madino. If a Jew worships avodah zarah even once, so that means that the Jew is what we call a meshumid la'avodah zarah, and a meshumid la'avodah zarah is meshumid l'chol ha'Torah kula, and as we discussed a couple times before in this forum, someone who violates Shabbos publicly or worships avodah zarah for ritual purposes only loses one's status as a Jew. It's also an unusual aspect to this mitzvah that usually we have a principle that if you retract a statement or a purchase or something like that within Toch Kedei Dibor, which is enough time to say Shalom Alecha Rebbe, to say three words basically, then that's considered a valid retraction. But there are a few things where this does not apply, and this is one of them. That if you say, if you take an inanimate object and you say, Ata Eli, you say, oh, this is my God, then you say, oh, no, Ein Ata Eli, you're not my God. That's not sufficient. Shelo Nemar Bezeh Toch Kedei Dibor Kedibor, Duhu Adin Binyan Kiddushin. So for this instance, it's not considered a retraction in Toch Kedei Dibor is not valid, and the same is true regarding marital halacha, where if you say Harad Mikudeshesli and you give a woman a ring and then you take the ring back 1 second later and say no, you're not Mikudeshesli, then that's also not valid, and the kiddushin is valid. In other words, the retraction is invalid because the assumption is basically that there are certain things that unless you were absolutely sure about it, then you wouldn't have put in the thought to say it. So if you weren't absolutely, totally invested in saying that this is an Avodah Zarah, or that you wanted to marry this woman, or for a get that matter, you can't just say, Hare Zegitech, and then take the get back 1 second later and say, no, it's not. I don't want to divorce you. That's not valid. So Toch Kedei Dibor, the retraction does not work for these purposes. So let's say you have a statue and you do not believe it's God at all. You do not believe it's a deity in the slightest, but you feel it's such a beautiful statue that it's worthy of your attention and you worship the statue. So that is, let's say you don't believe it's a deity, but you're superstitious and you think that if you don't honor this statue, bad things are going to happen to you. But you do not at all believe that it's a deity of any kind, then you are technically not in violation of the Isra Avodah Zarah, but it's still a lav and you might receive Malkus for it. But you don't receive the full penalty for worshipping Avodah Zarah if you do something like that. Very not recommended, but not technically Avodah Zarah. V'chein ha'osela, it could be a lo sechonim or something like that. V'lo v'chein ha'osela kivudos kigon chibuk v'nishuk. Let's say you hug and kiss the Avodah Zarah. Sach malbish umanil, you anoint it, you put shoes on it, you put clothes on it. Mahu dini suro, that's also a lav. You would receive malkus for that, but it's not technically Avodah Zarah per se. V'dinei bitulei Avodah Zarah keitzad, there is the achiluk shebein Avodah Zarah di Yisrael, Avodah Zarah de goy le'inyan bitula. The nullification of Avodah Zarah is a very interesting halacha, that we have a difference between an Avodah Zarah that's not Jewish, or practiced by non-Jews, and an Avodah Zarah that's owned or practiced by Jews. So a non-Jew has the option of nullifying his or her Avodah Zarah. So let's say they have a statue in their house that the family gathers around and bows down to every morning. They believe that's a deity. And then one day they wake up and they say, or one member of the family even says, well, wakes up and says, wait a minute, this is not a deity. And you perform an action on the statue. Let's say you chop off part of the statue or you break it up. That is called Bittul Avodah Zarah. Then now you're allowed, this is no longer considered Avodah Zarah, and you're allowed to derive benefit from it. There's halacha that you're not allowed to derive any benefit from Avodah Zarah whatsoever. So once a non-Jew nullifies his or her own Avodah Zarah, then you're permitted to derive benefit from it. It's no longer considered Avodah Zarah at all. However, if a Jew worships Avodah Zarah, has a statue that he worships, then that Avodah Zarah is usur forever, because it's a totally different level of Isser, a totally different level of a Toeva, of an abomination that a Jew worships Avodah Zarah, so it's not considered, so it's never possible to be nullified. The Isurei Hanoa Shel Avodah Zarah Ad Heichan, so even if you burn the Avodah Zarah, you have to bury the ashes. You can't even have benefit from the ashes of Avodah Zarah. It's completely forbidden to derive any benefit from it. The achiluk shebein tolush anevad lemechuber meikaro. Now, there's a difference also between what can be Avodah Zarah between something that's connected to the ground and something that's not. Let's say someone worships a mountain or something that's part of the natural ground, so that mountain does not become forbidden because of Avodah Zarah. And you can't say, oh, no Jew could ever climb the mountains and put on the mountain ever. You don't say that. It's only, but if they do an action on the mountain, then it could become forbidden, actually. So, for example, if you have a field and someone bows down to the field, then it does not become an Avodah Zarah. But let's say you dug ditches and made caves in the field and you bow down to those, then those would become forbidden because it wasn't just the natural state of the field. It was somebody did an action on the field that rendered it usable for Avodah Zarah. But if something is an object that's not connected to the ground, then if somebody worships it, then it's a major problem. Of course, it has to sort of belong to them. If you have a cow or something, and somebody, let's say this table, somebody walks in and bows down to the table, say, haha, you can no longer use this table for your shul, so that doesn't work. It has to be, if it doesn't belong to you, you can't just say, haha, you know, I'm going to ask for everything. V'din mishamsh meimasa hinase avodah zarah, and from what point does it become an avodah zarah? As soon as it starts to become worshipped. V'din mishamshi avodah zarah. Let's say there are utensils that are used to serve the avodah zarah, then that's also forbidden. And once you are mevatel the avodah zarah, you nullify the avodah zarah, so the utensils also become nullified as from the din of Mishamshi Avodah Zarah, things that are used to serve Avodah Zarah, which they would also be forbidden to derive benefit from at that time. But Tikrovet Shalom Adino, let's say there's an animal that's offered in sacrifice to Avodah Zarah by a Jew, non-Jew, by anyone, that animal is forbidden forever once it's been offered, and you can have no benefit from it, and it doesn't have bittul. Even if later on they were to nullify the Avodah Zarah to which it was offered, it doesn't count retroactively, and once it's offered to Avodah Zarah, then it's always impermissible. This was, of course, major news recently in the last few years, where they had the Indian Shetal controversy, where these ladies in India were donating their hair at the temple of an idol. So it was a question whether they were donating their hair in service of the idol, in which case their hair would be Tikrovas Avodah Zarah, or they were only donating it in honor of the idol. They didn't actually think they were donating it. Their donation per se was worshipping the idol. So that was a major issue. Rav Elyashiv, apparently, based on, okay, he didn't do his own research, according based on the information they told him about Hinduism and all these things. So he passed it was Usur. So once people started finding out this information, the Rav Elyashiv held that Indian hair shetals were Tikrovas Avodah Zarah, and they were forbidden to derive benefit forever. There were all these bonfires, all these ladies were throwing their wigs into the fire. So that was an issue. So not everybody held that way. Some people felt that if you really understand Hinduism and what these ladies were thinking, it was not a problem of Tikrovas Avodah Zarah. I know several rabbis, I have no personal opinion on the matter. I don't know if Indian hair or shetals are even available anymore after this controversy so much. I mean, in Jewish stores, but you know, a few rabbis that I very much respect to do their own research and really understand the issue deep down on their own felt that the information was not correct and that the wigs were not a problem with the Tikrovas Avodah Zarah, but I cannot, that is not a psak. I have no opinion on the matter. I don't know. The Avodah Zarah, shehi nichua uvdeha, let's say there was left, so you have to know at what point it's considered bittul or not bittul. V'harchoka me'ovdeha b'yom avodasa v'samuchlo. And we also, that's the very first Mishnah and tractate of Ozara, lifnei edeyam shel goyim shel sheyamim aser laseis v'laseisi mohen, that in the land of Israel, you're not allowed to do business with people who are worshipping Avodah Zarah 3 days before their festival and during the festival itself, because some of your interactions with them might cause them to go thank their Avodah Zarah for that this business went well for them. So you're not able to do that. In Chutz La'aretz, outside the land of Israel, it's only forbidden to do business with idol worshippers on the day of of the festival itself, and not 3 days before. Presumably this has to do, A, with the extra Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, also because of the just the practices of the idol worshippers in the land of Israel, and how doing business apparently was part of the celebration of the festival in a more direct manner than it is in Chutz La'aretz, so it's only Asur on the day of the festival itself. This leads us to a very interesting Rambam, because the Rambam says, the Rambam, of course, holds, in contrast to other Rishonim, that Christians are considered to be Ovdei Avodah Zarah, or considered to be worshippers of Avodah Zarah. So he holds, actually, that we may not do business with Christians on Sunday, ever. Rishonim in Christian countries mostly ruled that Christianity was not the shituf, as Morris called it, the combination of the Godhead with another figure was not necessarily considered avodah. This is a complicated sugya. I can't say. We don't really hold that Christians are of the avodah zarah, and most Christians. Well, in Chutz La'aretz, it would only be on the day of the festival itself. Yeah. But that's true. If there's a Hindu store or something, and you know there's a Hindu festival, probably you should not buy from them on the day of the festival itself. And even though we're not done with mitzvah, I don't want to keep people longer. So we're out of time, and we'll continue next time.